Parsha is Parshas Be'aloscha, and I actually would like to share with you a Dvar Torah that connects the beginning and the end of the Parsha, almost like a sandwich. The first part of the Parsha and the very closing episode of the Parsha, I think, share a very, very common message, and it's a very, very beautiful message that I think is very, very important for us to internalize for today and for every day of our entire lives. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach. The parasha begins, as we know, with the story of Aaron. Aaron is called upon to light the menorah. Now, the Rashi comments and says the following thing: how come this parasha of Balosra is put right after the parasha of the Nesiim? In last week's parasha, the Nesiim brought korbanos to inaugurate the mizbeach. And all of a sudden, after that parsha comes this parsha, the parsha of the lighting of the menorah. What's the connection? So Rashi asks, "Lama nismacha?" What's the connection? Why are these two things put next to each other? And the Gemara and Rashi says the following thing: Aaron saw every tribe. Aaron saw Reuven, Shimon, all the tribes come and offer a korban for the mizbeach. But Aaron's tribe was not able to offer a korban. And it bothered Aaron very much. Hashem says to him, "Don't worry, Aaron. You're going to have something which is better than that. You're going to have the opportunity to kindle the menorah every single day in the Mishkan, and your children will do the same in the Beis HaMikdash for generations to come." That's the famous Rashi. And the obvious question is, why did Hashem pick the menorah as the source of appeasement for Aaron? Why the menorah? Why is that the prize, so to speak? Don't worry, you can't bring a carbon on the staff, but it's okay, because you can light the menorah every single day. Rav Zilberstein in the Sefer suggests, in Alin L'Shabeach, the idea, the following idea. We know from the Medrash that lighting of the menorah, lighting up light in the Beis HaMikdash, is a symbol of Hakaras HaTov. How so? Hashem doesn't need our light. Hashem lights the whole world up every single day. And He lights everything up for us also. But Hashem still asks us to light something up for Him, to light the menorah up for Him, so that we should not feel like we are a chesed case. Hashem wants us to feel good. We shouldn't feel like, oh, you know, we're just getting, and not giving anything back to Hashem. So Hashem says, light it for me, so you can feel good. The Medrash says the following mashal: is a blind man, and he's walking on his way, he keeps stumbling. All of a sudden, a nice guy sees him walking on the street, he escorts him to his home. And he gets into his house, and when he gets to his house, the man that can see says to the blind man, "Please do me a favor." "A favor for you? Sure, anything. Please light a candle for me." "Light a candle for you? You can see, I can see, yeah. But I don't want you to feel beholden to me. I don't want you to feel like you owe me one. I don't want you to feel like I'm the Baal Chesed and you're the Mekabel." No, Hashem wants us to feel good. The whole lighting the menorah is the concept of Hakaras HaTov, the concept of us of being grateful, of a person not feeling like they owe one, but no, Hashem shows his gratitude to us. Hashem shows us His gratitude. We don't need anything. Hashem doesn't need anything. Hashem says, "Anyway, please, I want you to light the menorah for me." Hashem kavyachol shows us, teaches us how to have gratitude, how to be thankful in the most perfect way. And the person that receives the gift doesn't even feel like they're receiving a gift. They're doing something for us. The idea of the menorah is Hakaras HaTov. Fast forward to the end of the parasha. What's the last episode of the parasha? I know it's a very long parasha of Shnayim Mikra, so I'll clue you in. My pleasure, on the house. The last part of the parasha is, drumroll, the story of Miriam and Aaron speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. They say whatever they say, Hashem gets involved. How do you not fear to speak about Moshe Rabbeinu this way? What happens to Miriam and Aaron? They get tzaras, they get leprosy. And how long do they have tzaras for? How long do they take it for? 7 days. And what happens to B'nai Yisrael during those 7 days? The Torah says, nothing. V'am lo nasa ad he'asef Miriam. Until Miriam is clean, comes back to the camp, until everything is better, what happens? B'nai Yisrael don't travel. They wait for her. Can you imagine? Millions of people in the desert waiting For one reason, for one person, for Miriam. Why is that? Why are they waiting for one person? Why are they waiting for Miriam? And the reason suggested, again, is that of Akar Satov. You know why? Because Miriam waited for whom? Moshe Rabbeinu. You see, Moshe was put in a little basket with a little baby. And what's going to be with Moshe? So what did Miriam do? She hid behind the bush, and she watched. And then she went and got Moshe Rabbeinu's mother. Moshe Rabbeinu's mother, whose name was Yocheved, to come down and Abosai, to come down and take care of Moshe Rabbeinu. And she saved Moshe Rabbeinu's life. And for that, the entire Jewish people wait for 7 days because Abosai, the idea of Hakaras HaTov is so important. It spans even generations. It goes, it's eternal. Hakaras HaTov is so important. Yeah. The whole Jewish people have Hakaras HaTov to Miriam for what she did for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is their leader. She saved his life. Everybody has Hakaras HaTov. The parasha begins with Hakaras HaTov of the menorah and ends with Hakaras HaTov of Miriam. Abosai, I want to talk for a few minutes about the idea of Hakaras HaTov. The idea of being thankful. The idea of saying thank you. I want to show you how a person should say thank you. And I want to show you also how strong and how powerful one thank you can be. Two stories. Story number one. Rav Aaron Cutler was a yeshiva. Which yeshiva? Lakewood Yeshiva. He's one of the people that founded, that's responsible for most of the Torah learning that's going on in America today. Rav Aaron Cutler was responsible for that. There was no yeshivas that came to America in the 1940s. He came from Europe, and he started the yeshiva in Lakewood, and that yeshiva was the first real yeshiva, big in mass in America. Yeshiva University also was around at the time, but the first yeshiva that was established with only Torah learning without any college at the time was Lakewood Yeshiva. A few students came with Aaron Cutler to Lakewood, a little wasteland in the middle of South Jersey somewhere, and all of a sudden Lakewood was built up to a tremendous empire of tourists, thousands and thousands of people. Now, Aaron Cutler was there many, many years ago as Rosh Hashiva, and he once traveled after Yom Kippur. He was very, very weak. Traveled with his wife. They were going after Yom Kippur to somewhere for a sukkah. They didn't have cars in those days, everybody, so he traveled on a bus. He gets on a bus, him and his Rebbetz and his wife, and one of his Talmidim, Rav Brev David, to be his name, came on the bus with whom? Aaron Cutler and his wife. And they go on the bus, and Rebbe wants to ask Rav Aaron Cutler some questions. And Rav Aaron says, "I'm really sorry, I'm very tired. I don't have koch to answer your questions on the bus." And they get on the bus, and they're about to they get off the bus, and Rav Aaron Cutler has a small package of bag. And they get off the bus, and they're about to part ways. Rav Aaron has to take another bus, or another cab where he's going, and Rebbe is going somewhere else. And all of a sudden, Rebbe says, "You know what? My Rebbe's very tired." So he goes ahead, and he takes this small little suitcase. What do you have? Probably the safer too, or maybe a change of clothing. And he picks it up for his Rebbe, and he puts it into the cab that's going to take the Rebbe to the next destination with his wife. And the Rebbe goes on to his merry way. All of a sudden, there's a scream in the street. "Hello, hello!" I think his name was Shlomo. "Shlomo! What's going on?" Aaron Cutler is calling him back. And you can imagine the scene on the street. There's lots of Jews, non-Jews, everyone's there. Watching this older man calling Rav Brev to back. What does he want from him? He bends down over to him and says, "Thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. You're such a Baal Chesed. You're such a kind person. Thank you for bringing my suitcases into the car for me." And then he let Rav Brev to go back on his merry way. And everyone watched this and they said, "Wow." The Jews, the non-Jews alike, they said, "Look at this giant of Torah." Not because he's great in Torah, which he was a giant, a massive giant in Torah. But the midah of Hakaras HaTov was so important. What was it? A small bed. Who wouldn't pay money for the zechus to take Aaron Cutler's bag? But Aaron Cutler said, "Someone does a chesed for me, I have to be Makir Tov. Not just be Makir Tov in a small way. I have to be Makir Tov in a big way." I'll tell you two more stories about thank you. Listen to this story. There was a great Rav who was in the Holocaust. The Chabina Rav was his name. Chabin. He's from Chabin. And after the war, So the Red Cross, put out a list of Jews that were found in Russia. Shada. And there was a fellow, his name was Ornstein, and he looked in the list, he saw the name Wiedenfeld. The Chibina's Rav's name was Wiedenfeld. But he had no idea which Wiedenfeld it was. Maybe this is the Chibina Rav's residence. Maybe it's some other person in Russia. Maybe it's another Jew. So he said, you know what? I'm going to send packages. So he sent packages to this person called Wiedenfeld, who was in Russia. Maybe it's the Chibina Rav, maybe it's not. He doesn't know what happens. All of a sudden, many years later, the war was over. Chibina Rav comes to Eretz Yisrael. One day, this of Ornstein receives a telegram in his house in London. This fellow was in London. Listen to this telegram. It could blow your mind. Listen to what it says. A few words. Today, I got to Haifa. That's the opening sentence. Thank you for the food packages that you sent. Signed, Wiedenfeld. Who signed it? The Chibina Rav. Today I came to Haifa. I came to Israel today. And what's the first thing I did? After surviving the Shoah, after surviving all the trauma of the Holocaust, all the Gehenna, the first thing he does, he gets off the boat. Today I came to Haifa. Thank you for the food package that you sent me. Wiedenfeld. That's on his mind. Thank you is number one, primary on his mind. And how far can a thank you go? Listen to this story, and with this we close. There was a fellow who was driving a train. That was his job. He drove trains. And one day people started seeing that he started getting more and more religious. So much so that he actually totally became frum. And it was like a shock to everybody because he was driving trains for years. And no one, he never let on that he was becoming more and more frum. And all of a sudden he's like wearing a yarmulke, putting on tzitzis, and he becomes totally frum. What's going on over here? People approached him and they said, please tell us what happened. He said, one morning, I took the passengers to their destination and I'm about to get off from my seat in the front of the train, the conductor's box, take a little break, take a little fresh air. I see a Haredi Jew that gets off one of the buses and he's coming close to me. He says, wait a second. He puts out like another Israeli, this. Wait a second. So I waited. He comes over to me and says one word. Tada. He said, the one word of this man just hit me like a ton of bricks. He said, I'm driving a train. I'm driving the same train for dozens of years. And not one passenger ever came over to me, to the driver of the train, and said thank you to me. He said, not one person, I guess, thought of the fact that, you know, I also get up early in the morning. I leave my wife and kids and come and drive this train. True, it's my job. True, it's my profession. But this Jew not only came over to say thank you to me, but he said thank you to me in such a warm, sincere, genuine way. I said to myself, there's got to be something to it. And the rest, like they say, is history. He said, I looked into Yiddishkeit more and more, and I became from. I both say, how practical of a lesson is this for us? Ugasi, next door. What's her name? The other one's name?
Edna.
What's the other fellow? Mika.
Samuel.
It's nice. Samuel.
Tuvia.
These are people we see all the time. Just good morning. Thank you. You know, if they wouldn't come clean our rooms for us, our rooms would look, who knows what, Hashem Yishmol. And now they come and they clean up our rooms for us. Thank you. The guard upstairs. Thank you. The bus driver, who obviously you're going to pay your Ravka when you go on the bus. And after you pay the Ravka, just motion. Toda. Or don't motion. Go up to the bus and say thank you on the way out. You're walking by him anyway sometimes if you get off the bus in the front of the bus. The conductor and the person that comes on the train to check your tickets.
Oh. Thank you.
You're like, I don't want to see you right now. No, you say thank you. You say thank you. I both say it's a small thing. It's a small gesture. It's one word. Actually, in English, it's two words. In Hebrew, it's one word, todah. But I both say the one word, todah, can go so far. It's the menorah, which pacified Aaron. It's all of Klal Yisrael waiting for 7 days for one person for Hakaras HaTov. And I both say it's a genuine golden midah that literally defines who a person is, who a person can be. It's a small thing that goes such a far away. We should be zochet to become people that are grateful, that see the tov, that look for the tov, recognize the tov, and are makir tov. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Shabbos.